The next sutta is a continuation of the same theme. It's called Removing Resentment. So it is about how to remove ill will, right? And how to remove anger. And this is just another angle. This is a very practical and very straightforward angle. And you will see that we are going to repeat many of the things that it's saying already. But it just gives you an additional viewpoint of the same thing. So this is from the Anguttara Nikaya, and this is how it goes. There, the Venerable Sariputta addressed the bhikkhus, friends bhikkhus. Friend of those bhikkhus replied, and the Venerable Sariputta said this: friends, there are these five ways of removing anger, right, resentment, by which a bhikkhu should entirely remove resentment when it has arisen towards anyone. What five? Here a person's bodily behavior is impure, but his verbal behavior is pure. One should remove resentment towards such a person. A person's verbal behavior is impure, but his bodily behavior is pure. One should also remove resentment towards such a person. A person's bodily behavior and verbal behavior are impure, but from time to time he gains an opening of the mind, facility of the mind. One should also remove resentment towards such a person. A person's bodily behavior and verbal behavior are impure, and he does not gain opening of the mind, facility of the mind from time to time. One should also remove resentment towards such a person. A person's bodily behavior and verbal behavior are pure, and from time to time he gains an opening of the mind, placidity of the mind. One should also remove resentment towards such a person. So, so far, pretty boring. The same statement again and again. So, the idea, and this is like the summary of the sutta, and this is how the suttas are often structured, right? Summary first, and then the exposition afterwards, and then perhaps a summary at the end again. So you can see the Buddha was a very good teacher. He had all these good pedagogical methods, right, to make people understand the teaching. Now the point here is that these five different types of people, they include everybody. There's nobody who doesn't fit into one of those groups or the other one. Right? From the most worst, dodgy scallywag to the most saintly person, everybody is included there. So this is good. So what that means is that there is no excuse to have ill will towards anybody, right? That's what the Buddha is saying here. Anybody, it is possible to remove anger and resentment towards them. This is what this is all about. So let's find out how this is done. So, first person. How, friends, should resentment be removed towards the person whose bodily behavior is impure, but whose verbal behavior is pure? Suppose a rag-robed bhikkhu sees a rag by the roadside. He would press it down with his left foot, and spread it out with his right foot, tear off an intact section, and take it away with him. So too, when a person's bodily behavior is impure, but his verbal behavior is pure, on that occasion one should not attend to the impurity of his bodily behavior, but should instead attend to the purity of his verbal behavior. In this way, resentment towards that person should be removed. Right? You recognize this? Right? The idea of attending to the right thing in the person. When anger arises in you because you're attending to a certain sign, you shift and you look at a different sign. This is exactly what is going on here. Instead of looking at that impurity, that badness, which gives rise to negative reaction in you, you shift your attention to the good aspects instead. Here, the distinction is made between verbal behavior and bodily behavior. I think that can be understood as basically everybody is complex. We're all complex people. We have some good sides, we have some bad sides. Or we have many good sides, rather, and a few bad sides, right? So many good sides and a few bad sides. And then you can choose whether you want to focus on the bad ones or the good ones. This is really what this means. I don't think you have to worry too much about the bodily versus verbal behavior. It just means that we are complex, many aspects to us. So then you have this beautiful simile here, which explains how you're supposed to do this, right? A rag robe bhikkhu sees a rag by the roadside. Hooray, a rag, right? If you're a rag robe, you're very happy to see a rag because you're going to make the rag robe. So this, in those days, they made rag robes. They had this really, robe was made of all these little squares, right? Sometimes really filthy, sometimes really, and sometimes they were okay. And it's quite cool when you have a rag robe. I used to have a rag robe myself when I was in my early years as a monk. And every, kind of, all kind of different squares, different colors, only allowable colors, of course, but, you know, different colors and things. And it looks kind of, it's quite nice. It means it's very frugal, right? You just pick up rags, whatever you find, and you sew them into a robe. It's actually very nice. These days, it doesn't matter so much because cloth isn't as expensive. But in those days, cloth could be very, very expensive, much more valuable than it is these days. So actually being a rag robe monk or nun actually could have a real benefit at that time. Anyway, so you see your rag by the roadside, right? What do? You press it down with your left foot and then spread it out with the right foot. So what does that mean? Well, what that means is that you're getting an overview of the rag. If you put it down, spread it out, you can see the whole rag and you can see which parts are useful and which parts are bad, right? In the same way, it's like you have the person in your mind, you see the whole person. Sometimes when you get upset with somebody, all you see is the bad qualities, right? The mind doesn't want to see the good ones. If you are upset with somebody, and I tell you the person's good qualities, you don't want to listen to me, you don't want to hear about those good qualities, you want to hear about the bad ones. So the point is, we have to, when we look at the person, we have to be honest. And we have to see all the qualities of them. Spread the person out in front of you. All the qualities, right? So you can see everything that is there. So sometimes you have this, Ajahn Brahm had this very nice technique. I don't think he invented it, but he got it from somewhere else. The idea that you take a piece of paper and you write down all the qualities of a person, right? The good ones and the bad ones. So you write the good ones on one side, the bad ones on the other side. Then you tear the page in half. You take all the bad qualities, you crumble it up, chuck it out, and you're left with all the good ones. This is what this is about, right? Similar kind of technique. So you look at it, and then when you have an overview over the whole rag, then you tear off the intact section. What do you do with the intact section? Well, if you are a rag robe wearing monk or nun, you take it with you, right? Because in the future, you will be sewing a robe with that. So you take it with you. You put it in your bag, or you put it in a bowl somewhere, and you carry it with you. In exactly the same way, when you see those good qualities in the other person, you take them into your heart. And those are the qualities of that other person that you carry with you as you walk around in the world. Right? So that it's a beautiful idea that you carry with you all the good qualities. That is what you keep in your mind. What do you do with all the bad stuff? Well, the intact section, you tear it off and you take it away. But the stuff which is useless, you chuck it out, right? You throw it out. All those bad qualities that you remember about this person, you don't take it with you. You throw it away. It's garbage. It's rubbish. It is bad stuff. Don't take it with you when you move into the future. So this is the idea here of being able to focus on the good qualities and throwing out all the rubbish, all the stuff which clutters our minds and makes our life miserable because we carry this thing with us. You throw it out instead. So, very nice simile. I think it's very meaningful, even though it's very short, a very meaningful simile there to keep in mind. But of course, to be able to do that, you really have to do the work, right? You have to spread it out in front of you. What are the qualities? These are the good ones. And then remember that those good qualities are there. Bring them to mind. So you build those up. Forgive the person for the bad qualities. And eventually just chuck it out all together. And then that will enable you to refocus your attention if in the future anger or negativity should arise. Okay, so that is the first method. And the second method is very similar to the first one, so we will have a quick look at that one as well. Number two, how, friends, should resentment be removed towards the person whose verbal behavior is impure, but whose bodily behavior is pure. Suppose there is a pond covered with algae and water plants, and man might arrive, afflicted and oppressed by the heat, weary, thirsty, and parched. He would plunge into the pond and sweep away the algae and water plants with his hands, drink from his cupped hands, and then leave. So too, when a person's verbal behavior is impure, but his bodily behavior is pure, on that occasion, one should not attend to the impurity of his verbal behavior, but should instead attend to the purity of his bodily behavior. In this way, resentment towards that person should be removed. So this is very similar to the previous one. We're just swapping around the bodily and the verbal behavior, but the idea is the same. The main difference here is the simile, right? So, again, a very nice and very meaningful simile. So there is a pond covered with algae and water plants, right? So the algae and the water plants, they are all the, that's all the impure verbal behavior, right? All the impure verbal behavior, you see that? That's like the algae and the water plants. When you come to a pond and you want to drink or you want to bathe, you don't really want all the algae, that just gets in the way. So when you, the man comes, afflicted and oppressed by the heat, right? Weary, thirsty, and parched. Remember, anger, right? If you're angry about something, or you are, even if you have desire, but especially anger, it makes you feel hot, right? It makes you feel oppressed, it makes you feel afflicted. You want to get rid of it, it's a burden, it's a problem. You are weary, you are thirsty, you want something to alleviate that anger, that negativity, you want to get rid of that. That's the thirst that you have at that particular point. Parched, right? You have been heated up over a long time by this negative, focusing on these negative qualities. So this is just the idea that defilements, they are hot by the very nature, and they are unpleasant. So because of that, you want to get rid of those defilements. So what you do is you plunge into the pond, you sweep away the algae and the water plants, right? You sweep away those negative qualities. You don't want to see them anymore. And you drink from your cupped hands. Right? If you take away the negative qualities, what is left there is the pure water. And the pure water is like the good qualities of the person. What do you with those good qualities? You drink it up. You take it on board. You swallow it and then you carry it with you afterwards. Right? You drink them inside. Of course, when you drink them, when you drink it up, the heat is alleviated. You are no longer thirsty. You are no longer parched. You are no longer oppressed by the heat. You are no longer oppressed by the defilements when you imbibe and you drink all the good qualities in that person. It's quite nice, isn't it? And this is the, and of course then, once you do that, so this is what you take on board, and the rest of the stuff you just sweep it aside because it is bad and negative. And then you leave, then you can walk away, then you can walk on once you have done that, and then you carry that, carry those qualities with you, just as in the previous simile here. So, you can see here how the Buddha, well, in this case it's Sariputta, but you have the emphasis here is always on focusing on the good qualities, right? This is like the emphasis here. And so this is very similar to the idea of metta. The idea of metta is to be friendly towards other people, to have a sense of goodwill to others. And a very large part of that is a sense of seeing their good qualities. You cannot have metta towards somebody if you see only the bad qualities. You can only have metta if you're able to see something good and forgive the bad. So Buddha places here, or Venerable Sariputta places a lot of emphasis here on the idea of metta. And we will see that also in the next section coming up here, when there's even less good qualities, only a tiny amount of good qualities. Still, he says, we should look at those good qualities first of all. That should be the main emphasis. So metta is a very powerful technique, is what they're saying. And it's only in one case that metta doesn't work. That is when we cannot see any good qualities at all in a person. In that case, we have to use compassion. The compassion is secondary. Metta is first. Now, if you know your sutras well, and probably not many of you know your sutras not quite that well, but if you put, for anyone who knows them well, you will know that the Brahma Viharas, right, the divine abiding, they come in a certain sequence. Metta is always first, then Karuna, right, then Mudita, and lastly we have Upeka. Right? So metta, loving kindness, then compassion, then kind of joy or altruistic joy, or to try to different ways, and the last one is equanimity. So metta always comes first. And now you know, and now you can see the connection to this sutta as well, right? Metta should always be practiced first. Why is it? Why is that the case? Why so much emphasis on metta rather than compassion? We often talk about compassion being one of the most important things in Buddhism, but actually what it is saying is that metta is even more important than compassion. Why is that? And I think the reason is that when you focus on compassion, you are focusing more on suffering, right? When you see the suffering in somebody else, you have compassion towards them. So, but that focusing on suffering can always be a little bit dangerous, because it can also let you down. But you get depressed, oh no, so much suffering in the world, I can't deal with it, right? And you feel depressed as a consequence. Metta doesn't have any negative drawbacks like that. Metta is only focusing on the positive. It is no danger of kind of getting depressed by all the negative things. That's why I think metta should always be the primary approach, and karuna only really comes once the metta is well established. Sometimes you have to use karuna as well, but metta should be primary here. Okay, anyway, it is time to get ready for lunch, I think, is that right? Yeah? So, 11:45. So, good. So, please have a nice lunch. Enjoy your nice lunch. Then we'll see you back again here at 2 o'clock. Okay.